This podcast is for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to From Crime to Crime.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Not too bad. I have great news. I'm actually a full-time podcaster now.
Because you lost your job.
Yeah, exactly. So now this is how we do it. So this is how I make my money.
Perfect. Too bad we don't make any money.
If you guys could leave us a 5-star rate and review, that'd be super helpful. because
Grant has to take this pretty serious now.
I'm laser focused on this now because I'm a full-time podcaster. So
perfect.
Now that everybody knows that I'm a bum, let's jump into this and get going. So what's this week's episode?
You're not a bum. You're a full-time podcaster. I like that better. Yeah. All right. So on this week's episode, we are going all the way back to February 7th of 1992.
1992. Billy Ray Cyrus is on the airwaves.
Good guess, but no.
No? Oh, I really thought it was Achy Breaky Heart.
Nope.
John Michael Montgomery.
No.
All right.
Last shot.
Tracy Lawrence.
Ooh, Tracy Lawrence was number one the week before this.
Oh, man.
I know. I saw, I was like, oh, Grant would have loved that. Yeah, nope, it was Doug Stone, A Jukebox with a Country Song.
I have never heard of Doug Stone or that song.
Oh, yes, you have. Don't be ridiculous.
You say that, so, and then we go through this, and then I haven't.
Yeah, and then I play you the song after, and you're like, oh, yeah, I do know that. It's like, yeah, I know. So we're going to Palm Beach, Florida.
Ooh, drugs. Yeah. 92, Palm Beach, Florida. I'm thinking cocaine.
Yeah. Surprisingly, no. There's no cocaine in this.
That is a surprise.
Just crazy, which is pretty normal for Florida.
If they don't have cocaine, they've got gators, so.
Yep. So a guy named James Cooney, who goes by Jim, he's a prominent, pretty wealthy tax attorney in Palm Beach, and he's from, like, old money.
Oh, yeah.
And he meets a woman named Linda in the late 1970s, and Linda is not an attorney. She's, I'm pretty sure, like a secretary in a law firm or something. And they come from pretty different backgrounds. Jim's friends describe him as responsible and calm, cool, collected. And they describe Linda as a live wire.
Ooh, a live wire, huh?
Yeah. And probably a gold digger, but
oh,
they weren't sure at first, but they were like, obviously she's kind of...
Something's going on with Linda.
But, you know, opposites attract. So after a super short courtship, by 1989... Jim and Linda get married.
Thought we were in 92.
Well, the crime takes place in 92, Grant, but we're going back to 79 when they get married.
Oh, did you say that?
No, well, I mean, I just kind of went with it.
Oh, okay, cool.
Thought you would catch on.
Well, I did now. I just wanted to be sure.
Yeah. So after a short courtship, they get married in 79, and they have two sons, Kevin and Chris, but it was not all sunshine and roses. Like, Jim's life was not boring, I guess. There was always something wild going on with Linda. I mean, their marriage was rocky, to put it gingerly.
Because she was always up to something, or because she was nuts, or a little bit of both, or...
Both.
Oh, okay.
Everybody describes her as pretty mentally unstable, and emotionally unstable, and financially unstable. You know, a bit of a loose cannon, if you might.
I might. I think I will. Yeah.
You know, things like she would get mad at him, and she got in her car and ran over a briefcase, like this leather briefcase that his dad had made for him when he graduated law school.
Oh.
And she, like, backed over it a bunch of times in the driveway just to destroy it because she was mad at him. You know, just...
Oh, that's vindictive, man. Like, that's, that's nasty stuff.
Yeah. So they're kind of on and off because when you do stuff like that, you know, your husband tends to move out and then...
People don't want to hang out with you when you run over their things.
Yeah. So they're on and off. But by 1988, they split for good. Jim's over her bullshit. And their divorce is finalized in 1988.
Do we know what month?
Nah, doesn't matter.
Oh, okay. I just want to know how old I was.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. But they were splitting custody of the kids. And that was pretty tumultuous because even though they were split up, she was still pretty unstable. So... He didn't love the way she was taking care of their sons because he didn't think she was.
Doesn't sound like she probably was.
Yeah. So 4 years after their divorce in late 1991, early 1992, Jim filed to modify their custody agreement.
To what?
Well, he thought he was more financially and mentally capable of caring for the kids.
And was he, in your opinion?
I mean, When they talk about whether or not she was paying her mortgage, she would make comments to him like, well, if you were dead, I could pay it with your life insurance money.
Not the ideal response. Yeah.
No, and it's kind of a wild thing to say to somebody that you've been divorced from for 4 years. Pretty sure you're not his beneficiary anymore, but okay.
No, probably not. But also, you could say that to an ex-spouse. Right?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I feel like that's okay.
I feel like you could say it about one, but maybe not to one, especially when he was like legitimately asking, like, are you paying your rent? Like, are you paying your mortgage?
Yeah. I mean, even more so, though, I feel like that gives her not a reason, but like more reason to say something so off-putting. Like, well, if you were dead, I could pay it with your life insurance. Yeah. I mean, that's kind
of a
shut
up. Yeah, but she didn't say it in the fun, jovial way that we did. She said it in the like I'm going to kill you way, you know?
I could pay it with their life insurance policy. Like, how do you say it where it's not? Because, I mean, honestly, even that's kind of funny. Like, how do you tell somebody you could pay their rent with their life insurance?
Well, it sounds funny, like, on its face, but when there was more than one conversation about that, and she would ask other people about his life insurance and if it was up to date, and like, it was just a little much.
Oh, that? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now that I have some context, that's a little much. Beforehand?
Yeah, exactly.
Beforehand, I should have probably thought we're on a true crime podcast, so it's probably not going to end well.
Yeah. So he went to court and requested this modification of the custody. And in that modification, he asked the courts for a psychological evaluation for himself and for Linda to see who the courts thought that the boy should be living with. Because he's pretty confident that he's fine mentally, and
sure,
she isn't.
Sure, of course.
So he's like, well, I'll take one too. We'll do the psyche evals, but I'll take one too to prove that I am fit.
Okay.
Of course, this went over super well with Linda. She took it in stride and agreed to the whole thing.
Definitely.
No, she didn't. Oh. She snapped and was super pissed.
That does sound more likely of what she was looking for.
Yeah. She did not want to take a psychological evaluation at all. That was not something she was interested in.
That's usually true for people who need a psychological evaluation.
Correct. Yes, exactly. Ding, ding. You're getting this. So now the tension and the fighting is reaching a fever pitch in their relationship. And on Friday, February 7th, 1992, he was supposed to pick his kids up from Linda's house for the weekend. And usually he would pull up in the driveway and probably honk or whatever, and the kids would come out and they would leave to try to limit the interaction between him and Linda because it always would get volatile. So he didn't go into her house. He wouldn't go up to the door. It was their routine for him to just pull up, get the kids, and leave.
Yeah, it seems like a safer thing for everybody, right? The kids don't have to see them fight. They don't have to get their anger up. Yeah, that makes sense.
But this night took a totally different route. A little while later, a 911 call comes in from their son, Kevin, who is about 9.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And on the 911 call, Kevin tells the operator that there's been a shooting and they got to get there right away. So when the cops get there, they find Jim on the floor with 3 gunshot wounds and a knife in his hand inside Linda's house.
Okay. 3 gunshot wounds to him in himself, and he's holding a knife.
Correct.
Okay. Where's Linda?
Linda was in the doorway to her room, just looking into the hallway down at the police.
With a gun?
Yes. And the boys were in a back bedroom.
Jeez. So how come Kevin called 911 and not Linda?
Glad you asked. Because Linda called her lawyer before she called 911.
That's suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she shot somebody and then called her lawyer before calling anybody else.
Yes. And instead, her 9-year-old son called 911.
Did he have to wait for her to get off the line? Because they were sharing one landline at this point, right? Like,
yeah, I'm not sure how that happened, but
ooh,
yeah.
Gosh.
So in Linda's version of what happened that night, she says that Jim came into her house and attacked her with a knife. So in self-defense, she shot him 3 times with a .357 Magnum.
Oh, wow. That's a big gun. Or at least a big round.
It's a big gun, yeah. This story, though, went nowhere with his friends and family and people that knew them, because everybody said there is not a chance in hell that Jim would ever attack her. Besides just not being that kind of a guy, he had plenty of reasons in the past to want to kill Linda, and he never had. So why would he try to now after they've been divorced for 4 years and he was literally winning the custody battle? Why would he attack her now?
Yeah, but it sounds like she's got plenty of reason.
So the police are pretty skeptical too, and after recreating the shooting with his wounds, she shot him 3 times from a few feet away, and based on the blood splatter evidence...
Oh, they brought Dexter in to solve some stuff.
Yeah, he was already down when she shot him the last time.
Oh, wow.
In a self-defense case, it's like if somebody's already down, why are you going to go up to them and shoot them? But maybe, okay. You're just making sure, I don't know. But there's other things that were really majorly wrong with this crime scene. There was a glass door inside the house that was broken by one of the bullets. So there was shattered glass all over the floor. And when his body and clothing were inspected, he had shards of that broken glass on the front and the back of his clothing.
Oh, the front and the back.
Which means she rolled him over after he was on the ground.
Oh, so he's already on the ground from the first three. She rolls him over to shoot him again, or rolls him over after she shot him on the ground?
We don't know. We just know that she rolled him over.
Okay.
And he was shot on the ground. I think you can use your imagination to... Feels like a rolled him over and then made sure that she finished the job. But I don't know. Either way, her story isn't lining up super great, because if you kill somebody in self-defense and you're scared for your life, you're not going to go over and roll over his body. Like, you're going to run or hide.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she also said that he came into the house with a knife and attacked her, but the knife was from a set in the kitchen.
Oh, wow.
So if that was true, he would have had to come in the house, go to the kitchen first, get a knife, and then come down the hallway.
For this being 1992, they're really putting all the pieces together pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought they did a decent job here, actually.
Yeah, normally we hear about these cases and they're like, yeah, they had no idea the knife was from the same set.
Right? But the police also thought that the placement of the knife was sketch as fuck, because he was shot in the spine and in the head. So the investigators are like, well, I mean, would he still be holding the knife by the time he was on the ground? If you get shot in the spine...
Yeah.
And the head, it seems like possibly you're going to drop the knife before you hit the ground.
I would certainly think so.
I mean, I guess that's not proof perfect, but when you add all this stuff together, it's starting to look real weird.
Well, the spine too. I mean, that kind of goes against what she was saying about her self-defense thing, right?
Yeah.
Or is that the shot in the back?
I don't know. We don't really know. We don't know the order of the shots.
Oh, okay. Because, I mean, if it's two, like if it's a shot in the back of the head and in the spine, then obviously he was had his back to her. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that classifies as self-defense, right? Like the threat has to be imminent.
Yeah. Unless the first shot was to the front and then it spun him around and then she just real quick.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah.
We don't know. But it does seem that this attack maybe has some warning signs of being staged. But how did she get him in the house? That's what's like kind of weighing on everybody, because most people say he would not have just gone in her house. She had to have lured him in the house somehow.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think? Like to fix something? Or do you think it was like a sexual like lure?
Well, the police think that after they did a search of the home, they found a bullet ricochet mark in her bedroom, like on the floor instead of in the hallway.
Oh.
So they think that he pulled up in the driveway and that she, you know, fired off a round in her bedroom to get him to run in the house.
Oh, I mean, to be honest, with your kids in there, sure, I'm running in there. Otherwise, exactly. I'd probably run the other way. But with the kids in there, yeah, I'm probably going in too.
Yeah, your two sons are in there with a crazy lady and you hear a gunshot, of course you're going to run in.
Yeah.
That's the working theory, because everybody else says it's not like she would have came out and been like, come inside, and he would have gone inside. They were not friendly.
Wow.
It wasn't a situation where it would have been like, do you want a glass of iced tea?
Yeah. Or, I mean, I guess even to fix something like, hey, I got a clogged sink. Can you unclog it, or toilet or something? You know, something that a guy like that who probably did that for her in the past would be able to do. But sounds like they're so far beyond that.
I don't know.
He's
a tax attorney. He's a checkbook guy, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Tax attorney. Yeah, you're right.
I'm just kidding. But either way, they theorize that that could be a way that she lured him into the house.
He wasn't the attorney she called after she shot him, was he?
No.
Oh, okay.
So did he grab a knife from the kitchen when he ran in to protect himself or his kids? Like, I guess that's possible.
I guess it would depend on the setup of the house, right? Like, if the kitchen is, like, pretty close to the front door, okay. If the kitchen is, like, in the back, like in my house, then we have a different problem.
It doesn't make any sense. Exactly. And That's kind of what I gather, because the police start to think that she placed the knife in his hands after the shooting.
After he was dead, or was he not dead? Okay, so he was like DOA.
Yeah, because there was other clues that something was amiss. Like that day, she had called Jim a bunch of times to confirm what time he was picking up the kids, which she had never done. It was you know, he gets the kids at a certain time on Friday nights or whatever. But this day she called him a bunch of times to be like, you're still getting the kids tonight, right? Are you coming over at this time?
Oh, that's suspicious.
And this wasn't the first incident involving Linda pulling a gun on Jim. According to his friends and family, she had pulled a gun on him in the past when they were still together. At one point, even holding him at gunpoint and telling him that he had to dance for her.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, or that she would shoot him.
That's weird. That's really, really weird.
Yeah, and apparently that was the last day they lived together. That was the last straw for Jay. He's like, I can't. This is crazy.
I mean, I think that's, honestly, I was like, wow, what's this guy doing? But yeah, I think that's fair, man. Like, yeah, that's scary stuff.
Yeah, apparently he's not much of a dancer.
So he moved out.
Yeah. But her story didn't change, though. She said it was self-defense and that he was abusive in the past. I guess there's not really any witnesses to that because the kids aren't very good witnesses. They're kids, for one, and they're traumatized.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, and they say, you know, when this happened, they didn't really see anything. They were in the back room, so they don't really know. But everybody else in their lives is like, there is no way Jim was abusive. Not a chance. He was not that kind of guy. So during the investigation, they also learned that, like I told you before, that she had brought up his life insurance policy a bunch of times.
Too many times, honestly, from what like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. And she had found out that he had changed the beneficiary of his $1 million life insurance policy to his two sons.
Oh.
But if she has custody of his two sons, she would have access to that money.
Yeah, it's very true. Wow.
Yeah. Also, the psychiatric evaluation was weighing pretty heavy on her because it's pretty obvious that he was more mentally stable than her and financially stable.
If it wasn't obvious yet, it's obvious now.
Yeah. But if she went through with that and lost custody, she would lose access to any life insurance if she did kill him, for one. But she also wouldn't get her child support or any of that stuff if she lost custody of them.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. So when they went to do the GSR testing on his hands and all that stuff, and on her hands even, there was gunshot residue on his hands and the palms of his hands, but not on the knife.
So walk me through this then.
So if his hands were in an up defensive position, like, oh my God, don't shoot me, with his hands up, then he would get gunshot residue on his hands and the palms, but there was no gunshot residue on the knife. So if he had a knife in his hand that has gunshot residue on it, why is there no GSR on the knife?
Yeah. Oh, damn.
Yeah, this is blowing up big time.
This is really lining up really well for Linda.
Yeah. All these things that they find and the crime scene and all the witnesses and everything, it was enough for a grand jury to return an indictment for Linda. And she was charged with first degree murder. They believe she set this whole thing up.
I mean, I'm pretty convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that she did it. And I don't even have all the evidence, so.
Yeah, and she was arrested. Everybody was relieved. But then her attorneys got her out on bail while she was awaiting trial. And this is when her defense strategy kind of started to come together. And we learned that Kevin, their son, would be the main witness, which everybody was kind of like, well, okay, whatever, because
isn't that dude nine?
Yeah, he's nine, and that's not a good idea because traumatized kids don't make good witnesses, and he didn't see anything. He was in a bedroom.
Right.
Even on the 911 call, he says he didn't see it on the call.
Oh, good.
But her defense is she was going to claim that Jim was horribly abusive and that he attacked her that night with a knife and she shot him in self-defense.
Wow.
So this trial ends up being pretty public. It was even aired on Court TV, which was kind of new back then, airing trials on TV.
I didn't realize Court TV was that old.
Yeah. I didn't even look up when they started, but yeah, it was on Court. The trial was on Court TV.
Was this like when cable kind of first landed, I guess? Cable TV?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the history of cable TV, Grant. That's not my wheelhouse.
Sometimes you know a lot about random things.
I know, so but
I should at least ask. That. You should do a trivia night or something. You know a lot of random stuff.
We just did trivia night last night.
Oh, I didn't. I wasn't invited, but we live in different states, so I'll forgive it.
Yeah. So anyway, during this trial that was aired publicly, Kevin's 911 call was played. And like I said, he didn't say anything about his dad attacking his mom in the call, just that there had been a shooting. So again...
Oh, he doesn't even say his mom did it.
No. And in general, kids are not good witnesses because they're super easily influenced. Like when you're prepping a kid for trial, you could be like, you know, your mom will go to jail if you say this.
Oh, yeah.
And then they won't. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? So all the experts and all the witnesses testified about there being no evidence of an attack. No GSR on the knife being in his hand still, no history of him being violent, the position of his body when he was shot didn't line up with any kind of attack position. And everybody saying that they heard her talk about the life insurance multiple times. Like, this is not going well for Linda. Like, it's pretty clear she killed her husband. And they definitely laid out a case that, at the very least, she had been a nightmare of a wife for some time. And that Jim was making headway on proving that she was not fit to be the primary parent. And that he was probably going to get custody. Like, they were doing a really good job of proving that she's crazy enough to do this. She had the motive to do it. She had the means to do it. You know, they're putting on a really good case. But some of the witnesses' testimony was blocked by the defense attorneys and the judge. So they didn't get to hear everything, but they heard a lot. And everything was going on the prosecution's side until Kevin Cooney was called to the stand, which was Jim and Linda's son. And he gave testimony in his mother's defense and said on the stand that he saw something shiny in his dad's hand, implying that it was a knife. Yeah.
I did not think this case was going to go this way. And I hate when you do this, but you love when you do this. So
I know. Yeah. But like I said, this is the problem with child witnesses because they're easily coached on what to say.
Yeah.
Like, he had never said that before. And then he was prepared for trial by the defense attorneys. And now all of a sudden his story is different.
And so, couldn't something shiny in his hands easily be a watch? Watch face, I mean, near his hand shine? You know what I mean? Like,
either way, it was clear that he was scared of his mom going to jail. I mean, that's
Of course.
Clear that he was trying to make sure that the jury understood that, like, if she goes to jail, that's it. I'm an orphan.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. And it pulled on the jury because this little boy already lost his dad.
Yeah.
And now he's up there trying to defend his mom. It's heartbreaking. So when the trial's over, based on all the witnesses except Kevin, it was clear that she lured Jim inside the house, shoots him because she wanted the life insurance money and she wanted custody. And if he was dead, all of her problems would go away. So when the jury came back with their verdict, no one would have been shocked if she was convicted. But it turns out that the jury was really affected by Kevin's testimony and they were conflicted about leaving this little boy's orphan. So they returned a verdict of not guilty.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so Linda walked out of the courtroom a free woman, and she got custody of her sons back and just rode off into the sunset.
That's it, huh? Okay, so what happened?
I mean, it's not it, but...
Okay, good. Well, I was just going to ask, so what happened that later convicted her? Because I don't think you can leave me hanging like this.
Well, we don't hear a lot about the next 20 years. So for
20 years, no kidding.
Yeah, I mean, this happened in 92. And really the only thing we hear is that they moved to Las Vegas. The boys grew up, obviously, turned into men. Kevin is 6'9" and a bouncer at a club, and Chris became a police officer.
No kidding.
Yeah, and we
6'9" is huge.
And, yeah, I know. And we literally don't hear a lot. There's almost nothing about their life in the years after the murder until June 2011. Linda was arrested again.
Oh. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm listening.
For another shooting.
Of a person or just in general?
No, of a person.
Okay.
So on June 28th, 2011, Linda shot her son, Kevin Cooney.
What?
With the same .357 that she had shot his dad and killed him with almost 20 years before.
Holy shit. I got questions, but I'm sure you have some info, so give it to me.
So he survived the shooting and was in the hospital for a pretty significant amount of time. And the shooting resulted in him being paralyzed. And in the beginning, he tells people what happened, that apparently his mom's pretty controlling, sort of like a Norman Bates deal. you know, I mean, her grown sons in their 30s are still living with their mom, and she has the doors off the hinges and shit for their bedroom so they don't have privacy. It's weird stuff going on.
Sounds pretty weird stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and apparently she didn't like it when they dated, and she took issue because Kevin had a girlfriend and she didn't like her. And that's what they were arguing about.
She wasn't going to like any girlfriend he had, right?
Right. Yeah, totally.
That's what
I thought. So he says, you know, he tells people, yeah, she shot me. We were arguing and she shot me. So he's in a wheelchair by the time that she goes to trial.
Jeez. Where'd she shoot him?
In the neck. Yeah, he's paralyzed.
What?
For sure, yeah. He's paralyzed, yep.
She shot her son in the neck?
Yeah, with the same gun that she killed his dad with. Isn't that crazy?
Dude!
I know, but because she got off, they gave her the gun back.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So he's in a wheelchair now by the time she goes to trial. So once again, Kevin has to testify at a trial for his mom about shooting somebody. But by the time they go to trial, once again, he changes his story and he says that he attacked her and that they struggled for the gun and he shot himself in the neck.
No.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, dude. Kids are going to really be willing to do anything for their mom, right? Like,
yeah, but especially with whatever kind of weird, fucked up relationship was going on here. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, can you imagine being that girlfriend and being like, oh, okay, I'm dating this guy who lives with his parents. Okay. Weird, but understandable. And going over there and be like, where's your door? Like, my mom doesn't let me have one. Okay. I'm leaving.
Exactly. So the judge and the jury didn't buy this testimony either. They were like, yeah, clearly he's an abused person. Like, obviously, he's not a little kid anymore. He's 30, and he's a big kid. But, you know, it was clear that he had been abused by her for years. And so she was convicted, and she was sentenced to 13 to 41 years in prison.
Finally.
Yeah. So
finally.
She goes to prison in the end.
But, like, it didn't have to happen like that. She got 20 extra years out and about to shoot her son.
Yeah. Obviously, I was just joking when I said the end, so.
Oh, I thought you, I thought you were serious, because I was like, yeah, that makes sense. She went to prison, and that's where it ends.
Yeah, it should make sense.
There's
more? She got a 13 to 41 year sentence. That should be the end. She should be in prison.
That's why I thought it was over.
Yeah, except in, like, 2017, her conviction was overturned.
What?
Because on appeal, her attorneys proved that the prosecution shouldn't have been allowed to talk about the fact that she killed her husband in 92.
What?
During her trial for shooting her son, because she was acquitted. So they were like, that should have never been able to be brought up.
But that seems like pretty relevant to the case.
100%. Yeah. But she was acquitted. So technically, by law terms, they shouldn't have been able to bring that up. And so she wins her appeal and her conviction's overturned.
Unbelievable.
But the state's still like, well, you still shot your kid, so we're going to retry you, obviously. But they did some kind of negotiations. And in 2022, instead of being retried for the crime of shooting her son, she took an Alford plea and was released from prison.
And an Alford plea, if I remember correctly, is admitting you did something without admitting you did something, right?
It's pleading guilty without admitting guilt. Normally, when you plead guilty, you have to openly say in court that you did the crime. An Alford plea is where you can plead guilty by saying that you think the state has enough to convict you, but that you're not actually guilty. You're not saying that you did it. You're saying that the state has enough to convict you. So you don't want to go to trial.
That's a really good explanation, actually. That actually kind of makes more sense. Because if I remember correctly, that's how the West Memphis 3, that's how they also got out too, right? Yeah.
Yep. It's a way that the state does things to not get sued.
And not be wrong. Like, this way they're not wrong, but they're not right, but they're not wrong.
Exactly. On paper, they're not wrong.
Yeah.
So she was released from prison in 2022, and she still lives in Vegas, presumably with her sons, who have a weird relationship with their mom.
Man.
Yeah, that's the story of Linda Cooney and how she shot her husband and her son with the same gun and isn't in prison for either one.
That is a wild case.
Yeah.
That case, actually, it reminds me of another one. Do you remember that short fortune teller who escaped from prison, the small medium at large?
It was a dumb one. All right.
It was a dumb one, but it was pretty good.
It was pretty good. All right. All right. Love you.
I love you too. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
This podcast has been a production of Orange Halo Media, LLC, hosted by Grant and Erica. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. To chat with us, go to From Crime to Crime on Instagram, From Crime to Crime on TikTok, From Crime the number 2 Crime on Twitter, or you can visit our website at FromCrimeToCrime.com. See you next Wednesday.